This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson. I recently attended a 90-minute immersion into the life of a despot's wife. There were no seats, no refreshments, no intermission. There were, however, instructions in karaoke and disco line dancing. I'm talking about Here Lies Love, a brilliant new musical playing in New York right now that's a hybrid dance party and 20th century history lesson. It tells the story of Imelda Marcos, infamous and still living widow of Filipino president-turned-dictator Ferdinand Marcos. David Byrne and Fatboy Slim wrote the music, and it's directed by Alex Timbers, who is here with me now. Alex, welcome to Studio 360.
Thanks so much for having me.
So this show was described by the New York Times critic as a theatrical event and a paparetta. If you're on an airplane tomorrow and you meet somebody who doesn't know about theater or Imelda Marcos or David Byrne, how would you describe Here Lies Love?
Well, we knew we wanted it to feel like a nightclub, you know, that Imelda loved to visit Studio 54. She had a disco ball in her apartment and a dance floor in Manila on her roof. And so that was going to be that was the idiom for the music. And we thought it should be the sort of like the idiom for the staging. And it just, you know, one of the things that really was a big question for us is how do we involve the audience? I'm someone who does not like interactive theater.
Come on up. Let me humiliate you.
Yeah, exactly. None of that. But how do we justify the concept of it being a club show instead of you being able to see the exact same show just sitting in your seat and watching it? What makes this unique and have to happen this way?
As you say, that you kind of – it is this immersive club-like experience with these multiple moving stages all over the theater and a live pseudo-TV news happening among you as you're there. Mm-hmm. This audience is kind of a wandering mob shoved around the theater. did you ever draw back and say, okay, yeah, we wanted immersion, but this is getting to be too much?
Well, you know, we had certain moments where we pulled back, where we thought, you know, because you want to always feel like you're incredibly safe in the room, you know, even as you're moving around to the different stages to see the performance that's happening on this side of the theater or on that side.
Or being forced to dance, which I thought was going to mortify me as it was happening, but didn't.
Gently encouraged to dance, perhaps. But yes, I know. It's, you know, one of the things we did with that was we darkened the theater. You know, no one wants to sort of be aware of themselves dancing, but they want to have the freedom to it. You know, you're not forced to dance, but that's a great point. You know, we learned that, you know, if we want people to really respond, you got to make sure it's really dark so that everyone feels
funny.
Anonymous. Yeah.
The music is terrific, but it is not particularly or even recognizably, if you didn't know, David Byrne-ish music. When you first heard it, did it surprise you that this was a new version of David Byrne?
Well, yeah, it doesn't sound like, as you said, like typical David Byrne songs. You know, it stemmed from his collaboration with Fatboy Slim, and so it has a much more kind of, you know, him being a British DJ, it has a much more sort of clubby feel. And I think that's what people love about it. There is a sort of the sense of great irony and great melody that's inherent to David's work, but it feels like something completely new and exotic as well.
And not much irony. One of the things that surprised me was how conventional, in the best sense, this whole thing is. It's a real musical with heart and sentiment, and unlike some stuff, great stuff you've done in the past, not making fun of the genre or the characters. It's all in a kind of earnest way.
Well, I think when you hear there's like a disco musical about Imelda Marcos, you think it's going to be about shoes, or you think it's going to be some sort of, you know, spoofy thing. And we knew we didn't want that at the beginning. You know, David was like, there's no shoes. This ends before the shoes. There's, you know, people wear shoes, but there's no
And I applaud you for not making a shoes joke.
Thank you. Thank you. But at the same time, you know, there's these sung through musicals, you know, when you think of those like sort of British pop operas from the 80s are very self-serious. And so the question was really tonally, how do you still have fun? How do you still have a sense of irreverence without sending yourself up?
Right.
And so I think there is a sense of irony and irreverence, but there isn't a sense of kind of spoofing the idiom, which I think is an important distinction.
Right. Did David Byrne ever say to you, explain to you what got the bee in his bonnet about this?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was really interested in the politics of power. And he was interested in, you know, what world leaders come with their own soundtrack. And, you know, he sort of says, well, Henry Kissinger, you know, that guy doesn't – you don't know what music Henry Kissinger would rock out to. Whereas Imelda
– Metallica, you know, I know for a fact.
Yeah, Imelda, you know, she visited Studio 54. She loved club music. And so to him, it was a natural fit.
You are in your early, mid-30s. You were a child, a small child, when Marcos was forced out. How much did you know about the regime and the history of the Philippines?
You know, I didn't know that much. I mean, this has obviously been a sort of an incredible history lesson. And one of the things that I love is that when people leave the show, other than that they, you know, whether they enjoy it or not, is that they're looking up the history. And I think that's pretty cool.
The cast has a lot of performers of Filipino ancestry.
Yeah.
Did you get any notes from them about how to get this note or this culture or this feel of Filipino culture correct?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, what I think is so cool to these performers is that they're actually getting to tell the story of their parents and their grandparents. And it's this kind of, you know, this is living history. This is an Andrew Jackson, which took place, you know, where it's like 200 years ago. This, as you said, this woman's still alive. And so these experiences are really fresh to people. The order that declared martial law in the Philippines, Order 1081, which is a big story point in our show. The guy who wrote Order 1081's son was at the show last week. I mean, that's a trip.
And with the history of the Philippines after the war through the 80s with Andrew Jackson. You did a musical about Gutenberg. You've become a sort of semi-specialist in surprising shows about history. How did that happen?
I don't know. You know, I wasn't a history major in college, but I guess a fan of Schoolhouse Rock, perhaps. You know, there is a sense of how do you analyze the present by looking at the past, and how do you make the past palatable and fun by crashing together sort of the lowbrow and the highbrow. And I think that Here Lies Love is a real sort of unique version of the mashup.
You are a revisionist.
Thank you.
Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson, which was your terrific rock musical of a few years ago, drew all kinds of acclaim in its off-Broadway production. It went to Broadway. Now there's this, which, as you say, has been extended several times already. You are the directorial it boy of this moment.
I don't know about that, but thank you. That's very sweet of you to say that.
It's absolutely true. But I'm wondering, to the degree that's true, I'm sure it would be gratifying, but I can imagine it would also be the stuff of anxiety.
The getting to work with people like David Byrne on stuff like this that feels so sort of in the pocket, like in terms of just creating 360 experiences and things like that. This stuff is the stuff that really gets me going, you know?
And Shakespeare seems to be getting you going. This summer, mm-hmm. you are collaborating on with the composer of Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson on a musical version of Love, Labor's Lost in Central Park. Shakespeare is perpetually fiddled with by directors and reinvented and reimagined. That sets a bar higher for doing it in some satisfying new way, doesn't it?
Well, you know, what's one of the sort of landmark musicals that got me excited about staging musicals was Galt McDermott and John Guare's Two Gentlemen of Verona, which was a musical version of that comedy, which was done in the park 41 years ago. And there hasn't been a Shakespeare musical in the park in that time. And so we got really, you know, along with the artistic director, Oscar Eustace, the idea of taking another sort of lesser performed Shakespeare comedy and sort of seeing, you know, how we could put that into the sort of the musical dimension, which we're really excited about.
You chose a lesser performed one because it's less familiar and therefore you're freer to mess around with it?
I know. You know, it's a little less sacred. It was also something that I really responded to. You know, I love, as you said, talking about academia and history, and Love's Labor's Lost is a show that really takes on, you know, the university life and academia and young people coming of age. And so it felt really on narrative to the sort of themes that I love.
How old were you when you decided that this is what you wanted to do with your life?
It was out of college. I looked around and, I started doing improv comedy and sketch comedy in college and really was interested in the mechanics of comedy. And so I started directing farces. And when you get out of college, no one tells you that there's a sort of this adage that you have to have gray hair to direct, you know, that there's a certain, they don't let young people direct. And so what you end up having to do if you want to, if you want opportunities, you have to create your own opportunities. So I created this company that did work about in this sort of schoolhouse rock form about taking historical and academic subject matter and kind of turning it on its head. And that's been the – even though that was a downtown experimental theater company, it's been the source of all the opportunities that I have today.
I'm so happy that you're not one of these people who said, yes, at 8 I saw, you know, Equus and I knew that I was going to be a director.
I wish I had that much sense of destiny as a young child.
Alex Timbers, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Here Lies Love is playing at New York's Public Theater through the end of June, at least. And Love's Labor's Lost will be at the Delacorte Theater in Central Park starting in late July.
Why don't you love me? Why don't you love me? Why don't you love me? Why don't you love me?